Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world, a fascinating subject for intelligence scrutiny and a lot of political high drama, I think it's fair to say, involves the disappearance and presumed liquidation of a man by the name of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Turkey, evidently, to talk about what was the role that this chap Khashoggi was playing as a legal permanent resident in the United States, how he got that status, among other things, and what he was doing vis-a-vis the government of Saudi Arabia is a friend of this program, a man I enjoy visiting with from time to time very much. His name is Matthew Brodsky. He is one of our country's most thoughtful analysts of what's going on in the Middle East, and what's happening in connection with this story is no exception. Matt Brodsky, it's good to have you back. I saw your piece in the Spectator US the other day about why the media is ignoring a whole series of glaring questions about Jamal Khashoggi. Maybe you could use that as sort of the prism to explain who he really was and what he was up to that might have got him killed.
Right. I think the American media has done a really good job of repeatedly shooting itself in the foot when it comes to its credibility. And of course, the Khashoggi affair essentially shines another light on that, in which it focused on reporting that he was essentially some reform-minded Democrat who was just concerned about bringing democracy to the world. And he was just a journalist. I mean, in reality, we know that he is an avid supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood when that part. And of course, they said that in a Washington Post article he wrote in August in the headline.
Hard to mistake it.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, but still, even with that evidence, it's you still have most mainstream reporters trying to cover it as though he were simply a Democrat and a journalist. We know from Pachter Poole, another national security correspondent for PJ Media, he discovered that in 1998, there were two articles that he wrote for the Arab News while embedded in Afghanistan with bin Laden. These two articles from May 1998 happened just after Abdullah Azzam ended up writing his article, which formed the basis for what Al-Qaeda would become. And it was a few months before, because it was August 1988, as I recall, that Al-Qaeda came into existence. So we have, and he was placed there, incidentally, it's reasonable to assume, through his contact, Prince Turki Al-Faisal, in the royal family, who is, of course, on the opposite side of the succession Game of Thrones version, shall we say, that's happening.
Specifically, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. And Turki Al-Faisal was, of course, head of Saudi intelligence for a time. And I've been told by David Goldman, one of my trusted sources on a lot of things, that indeed this fellow was actually an intelligence operative for Turki Al-Faisal, working undercover as a journalistic sort, but nonetheless sort of involved in media manipulation. And it seems as though post-mortem, if indeed he's dead, that manipulation continues, doesn't it? So talk quickly, Matt, we're going to run out of time here before we run out of things to talk with you about, but bring in the interest that you mentioned, the Muslim Brotherhood, that would be for one, but Turkey, Qatar, two countries that are now very deeply involved in helping the Brotherhood, and not least Iran, all have in fomenting a real crisis in U.S.-Saudi relations over this horrific, evidently, hit by somebody working for the government of Saudi Arabia, we're told.
Right. I think you can see this play out in media, specifically in the region, according to who they support. We know that there are certain networks that will remain nameless. If you watch them right now or actually go on their show, as I've done, you will see the focus on all of these small details. Now, Turkey is leaking out information slowly. And for once, Erdogan is quiet. Erdogan, of course, the guy who calls everyone a Nazi, he's got a long list, just look that up. But now he's been quiet, allowing drip, drip, drip through the media, all through unverified state sources. That is not literally the, this is not the same thing as reporters doing investigative journalism. We know Turkey and Qatar do not like the Saudi Arabia. They're Muslim Brotherhood supporters. And of course, they're considered a terrorist organization inside of Saudi Arabia. So there's no friendship here. And everyone has an axe to grind.
Right. Well, more than axe to grind, I think they've got axes they would like to plant in the heads of Saudi Arabia and perhaps the United States as well. So, Matt, this raises the question of what President Trump should do in response to this attack on an American legal resident, albeit of Saudi extraction. I myself believe that there's an opportunity for a twofer here, but let me get your thoughts quickly.
Well, certainly there's a wide array of possibilities and suggestions people are giving to President Trump. The ones that seem more down the middle is, first of all, you definitely want to send a signal that this is absolutely unacceptable. The U.S. does not stand by this. So there should be some form of sanctions. Perhaps the Magnitsky Act could be used to target, for humanitarian reasons, part of the royal family, as it may turn out, whoever it is that did this or has decided that did this. The U.S. used that, of course, with Turkey against the interior and justice ministers when it came to the detention of Pastor Brunson. So that's one thing that would keep the focus on humanitarian issues while still allowing our alliance to proceed, which we need them in our coalition against Iran, understanding fully in support of a coalition to push back on Iran and to reform its kingdom. There are other options, of course. Some would like to see the Muslim Brotherhood declared as a terrorist organization. That's another thing to be explored. The most important aspect, though, is that we do not trash our bilateral relationship, which is something that, of course, those from the previous administration are avidly advocating and writing about and being interviewed about, because they'd like us to see us back in the nuclear deal with Iran and to turn our back.
They were on the other side for sure. Matt, I'm among those who believe that we should make sure that the bad guys in this deal, and I think that would be Turkey, Qatar, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Iran, don't prosper from whatever sanctions are imposed on the Saudis. And I think designating the Muslim Brotherhood be one way to do that. There's another option. I hope all of these will be before President Trump. And Matt Brodsky, I appreciate you giving your insights to us and hopefully to an awful lot of other people about what this really means and what we should do about it, the Khashoggi affair. Keep up the good work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Uze Bulut will talk with us next. We'll drill down more on what's going on in Turkey right after this.